VOA News via remote, I'm Laurel Bowman. Russian forces are blowing up bridges across the Seversky-Donetsk River to prevent Ukraine bringing in military reinforcements and delivering aid to civilians in the town of Severodonetsk. That's what the governor of the Luhansk region said on Saturday. In a TV broadcast, the governor said the Ukrainian military continued to hold its positions inside Severodonetsk and was pushing back Russian forces in several locations. The industrial city is the focus of a Russian offensive to take the eastern Donbas region. And Britain's defense ministry said on Saturday that Russian air activity remains high over Ukraine's Donbas region, with Russian aircraft carrying out strikes using both guided and unguided munitions. The ministry tweeted, "The increased use of unguided munitions has led to the widespread destruction of built-up areas in the Donbas and has almost certainly caused substantial collateral damage and civilian casualties." Ukraine's intelligence services are in communication with the captured Azovstal Steelworks fighters, and Kyiv is doing all it can to ensure their release, Ukraine's interior minister said. Uncertainty has surrounded the fate of hundreds of fighters taken into Russian custody in mid-May after being ordered to stand down. The war has had a devastating impact on the global economy, especially for poor food-importing countries. Ukraine is one of the world's leading sources of grain and cooking oil, but those supplies were largely cut off by Russia's closure of its Black Sea ports, with more than 40 million tons of grain stuck in silos. Kyiv and its allies blame Moscow for blockading the ports. Russian President Vladimir Putin denied that Moscow was preventing Ukrainian ports from exporting grain. This is VOA News. South Korea and the United States staged their first combined military exercises involving an American aircraft carrier in more than 4 years, Seoul's military said Saturday, amid reports that North Korea was preparing for a nuclear test. The three-day drills took place in international waters off the Japanese island of Okinawa until Saturday, including air defense, anti-ship, anti-submarine, and maritime interdiction operations. That's according to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff. Hong Kong deployed heavy security near a major park on Saturday as it warned people not to gather to commemorate China's bloody crackdown on pro-democracy demonstrators in Tiananmen Square 33 years ago. Saturday marks the anniversary of Chinese troops opening fire to end the student-led unrest in and around the square in central Beijing. China has never provided a full death toll, but rights groups and witnesses say the figure could run into the thousands. Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei on Saturday blamed recent protests in Iran on foreign enemies seeking to overthrow the government in the Islamic Republic. Also, he said enemies were waging a psychological war against Iran by accusing it of piracy for seizing two Greek ships after the United States confiscated Iranian oil from a tanker. The Supreme Leader's comments come after several weeks of demonstrations in cities over the rising cost of basic foods. A deadly building collapse last month sparked further protests blaming authorities for the incident. The Ayatollah has long insisted that U.S. sanctions are to blame for the soaring prices of basic foods in the country. Israel arrested four Palestinian fishermen off the Mediterranean coast of Gaza on Saturday, Palestinian and Israeli sources said. The Israeli military said it apprehended four suspects after two Palestinian vessels strayed from the designated fishing zone in the northern Gaza Strip, violating security restrictions. The Navy fired at the boats when they failed to respond to instructions to halt, it added. And Britain gears up for a Party at the Palace concert starring Diana Ross and Andrea Bocelli, set to be watched by millions to celebrate Queen Elizabeth II's 70 years on the throne. For more on this and all the stories we're covering, please visit us at voanews.com. We also have an app that you can download. Just search for VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News. We'll be right back.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotter in Washington, D.C.
Atiku comes from the northern part of the country. It's having that ticket and the possibility of him becoming president. If he wins in the general election next year, he's there. So people are not very comfortable with that arrangement. The southern part of the country still feed youth, in quotes.
A lawyer petitions the Nigerian High Court to challenge the eligibility of former Vice President Atiku Abubakar to contest the presidential election next year.
The team now from the Sani Absolu Hassan is led by the vice chairman of the ruling party, Colonel Abdulrahman Kinana, and on our side, Freeman Boy is leading our team. So we are still on the table dealing with issues, but the most critical issue is the new constitution.
Tanzania's main opposition party, Chadema, welcomes a government move toward reconciliation.
People are going to start registering, or they are going to change the voting station because they have been transferred from their places of work to another province, to another district. Or if their registration cards have been defaced, they are eligible to change and get a new one.
And the Electoral Commission of Zambia launches its voter registration drive in provincial towns across the country. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigeria, a constitutional lawyer has petitioned a federal court in the capital Abuja to challenge the eligibility of former Vice President Atiku Abubakar to contest the presidential election next year. Nigerians will be choosing a new president, senators, House of Representatives, governors, and local representatives. Atiku Abubakar recently won the presidential nomination of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP. He will lead the party in next year's polls after receiving a certificate of return, an official designation as his party's candidate. Local media report attorney John Mary Jidiobi contends that the former vice president is not qualified to compete in the poll. League analysts say the onus lies on Jidiobi to prove in court that the former vice president is not qualified to seek the high office of the president. For the latest developments and analysis, I reach attorney Leonard Anyongo. He is a constitutional lawyer based in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
There have been questions around Atiku's birth issue. I know the last time it came up, when he last contested in 2019, it was alleged that his place of birth was outside the territory of Nigeria. You know, if you look at the whole of the Adamawa houses, Adamawa is a state in Nigeria. Most part of that Adamawa or that area is situated in Cameroon, different from Nigeria. So there have been that allegation that his place of birth, as I said, he was giving birth to, that was not in the Nigerian territory, or that's not in Nigerian territory. So these are questions that have been asked before. But you also recognize the fact that when you institute an action in a Nigerian court, most likely the Federal High Court, as the case may be now, is going to go all up to the Supreme Court. It's only at the Supreme Court of Nigeria that the issue or the finality of the issue will be laid to rest.
Some people are saying that this is just mere politics because Atiku Abubakar served legitimately on two consecutive occasions as the vice president of Nigeria under President Olusegun Obasanjo. So why is this going, if I may ask? Is this politics as you see it?
Of course, you cannot rule out politics from this president's suit. But that is not to say that the constitutional provision can be abridged, can be abrogated because of the political connotation. What that means is that if you are not a citizen of Nigeria by birth, and in the previous instance that was not ascertained, and you had enjoyed that privilege of becoming a vice president, it is proven that actually you are not a citizen of Nigeria by birth, because the Nigerian constitution is the highest law of the land. So if you are in violation of the Nigerian constitution, if it is proven that actually you are not a citizen by birth, of course, that would be a question of the court to determine. If that is determined, then you'll be qualified to vie for the office of the executive office of the president, the vice president, the governor, the deputy governor. But remember quickly that if you want to run for the office of as a legislator in Nigeria, He doesn't need to be a citizen by birth. Now, the question is that, is Atiku citizen, is he a citizen by birth? That is the question that the court wants to answer. And of course, who alleges must prove.
Before Atiku Abubakar became the vice president of Nigeria, he served as a custom officer, rose to the highest rank. Are they therefore saying that all these, he served as an alien under the Nigerian constitution?
Yes, just like I said. I said, even if you are a Nigerian by civil registration, you can buy to be in the National Assembly, which is the Senate, or the House of Representatives, as the case may be. It's only the office of the president and the vice president, or the governor, that requires that you must be a citizen by birth. You know that you can have ways of acquiring citizenship. It can even be given to someone or through marriage. But for you, that's what the constitution, I don't know, there is the rationale behind it. I think it's more like, if you're a citizen by birth, you cannot be deported from your country. That is the fact. And so you don't have any other country other than your own country. But if you have come by, if you are awarded citizenship or citizen by marriage, if the marriage ends, you can be denied that citizenship. So it's a constitutional provision that is very rigid.
This is not the first time Atiku's eligibility or Nigerian citizenship is being questioned. What are the prospects that this time around it will succeed, especially when a lot of people from even his own party are not pleased with the way he even was elected as the presidential candidate for the main opposition PDP party?
Well, if you let's look at the primaries of the main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, it's a fact that the present governor of River State, Nyesu Wike, was up for the ticket. He was almost getting the ticket until his other colleague, the governor of Sokoto State, had to step down and, of course, gave his own delegates to Atiku Abubakar. If you look at the margin, it wasn't that high. But also remember that there has been this agitation that power should shift from the northern part of the country, Nigeria, northern Nigeria, to the southern Nigeria, because the present occupant is doing 8 years already. So there's this kind of an unwritten kind of, let me call it an unwritten constitution or convention, that power should rotate between the north and the south. So people are not actually very happy or are not happy that Atiku comes from the northern part of the country. It's having that ticket and the possibility of him becoming president. If he wins in the general election next year, he's there. So people are not very comfortable with that arrangement. The southern part of the country feel used, in quotes.
Leonard Anyogo is a constitutional lawyer. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Still in Nigeria, the presidential candidate of the opposition Labour Party says he is counting on the working class and market women to win next year's presidential election. This after Peter Obi, the former governor of Anambra State, was recently elected as the candidate of the party for next year's polls. Obi resigned from the main opposition People's Democratic Party days before his election as the flag bearer of the Labour Party. He contested as the vice presidential candidate with presidential candidate Atiku Abubakar of the PDP in the last general election. Analysts say it is not clear how the former Anambra State governor can defeat the candidate from the All Progressive Congress APC and the PDP due to their political dominance in Nigeria. For more on Peter Obi's electoral prospects, I reached the Director General of his campaign, Doyin Okupe.
It was a keenly contested election. There were four other contestants, including a very well-known famous economist, Professor Patrick Toomey. But as the election went ahead, Professor Patrick Toomey considered and he stepped down for Peter Obi. And later on, three other friends also did the same. That made him to become the flag bearer for the Labour Party in the 2023 election.
Realistically, what do you think are the chances of Governor Peter Obi in the upcoming general election next year? Realistically, what are his chances?
Most people will not take that candidacy too seriously because people believe that parties and experience have also shown the parties that do not have structures, really, no matter how popular the personalities are, usually they don't do well in the elections. But then, this is a little bit different because the Labour Party has a reservoir of electorate that is actually in population is by far bigger than either of the two main parties, the PDP or the APC. The Labour Party encompasses the Nigerian Labour Congress, the Trade Union Congress of Nigeria, and, you know, workers in general. The Nigerian Labour Congress is about 5 million in population. The TUC is more than 8 million. The NURWT, that is the Road Transport Workers, is about 5 million. The Market Women, and there are about 40 million small and medium-scale enterprises. Our intention is to find a way to maximize opportunities on ground, reawaken the interest of the workers in the decision-making process of their country and in the politics of their country and in the choosing of leadership of their country, and taking government back to the workers, which is exactly in line with the mantra of Peter Obi, trying to change Nigeria from consumption nation to a production nation.
But what do you say to those who are of the opinion that Peter Obi does not have financiers who will back his candidacy, and that due to the dominance of the ruling APC and the main opposition, PDP, it will be very difficult
that,
for
that,
him?
To say that he doesn't have financiers, that would be erroneous. Governor Peter Obi himself is a man of very high net worth. I mean, he has been a billionaire, you know, even as far back as almost 25 years ago. I mean, he's been recorded to be worth over $25 million as far back as 25 years ago. So he's not a small player at all. And, you know, because he's an Igbo man, the Igbos are naturally the richest people in Nigeria because there are many traders and businessmen. And because the Southeast, where the Igbos, are in majority, is actually extremely very desperate and anxious to get this presidential slot, I believe raising money for Peter Obi will not be a problem.
What do you say to those who are saying his abrupt resignation from the main opposition party to join the Labour Party was party hopping, which will not engender attractiveness of the Nigerian prospective voters to vote for him in next year's election?
That's not true. You know, we did our homework. We did a lot of survey. We did a lot of consultation. The Nigerian people, the real masses, the electorate, were waiting for Peter Obi to get the ticket. And the PDP was becoming the obstacle. So the circumvention of PDP was an inevitability, you know, if Obi really wants to be president. The people, the youth especially, are clamoring for Peter Obi. And, you know, the groundswell of support nationwide is amazing. It's almost not been seen in the country before.
Doyin Okupe is the Director General of Peter Obi's presidential campaign. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Tanzania's main opposition party, Chadema, has welcomed as a positive step a government move toward reconciliation. This following the payment of the pension and other benefits of its vice president and former presidential candidate Tundu Lissu. Lissu, the former president of the Tanganyika Law Society, was stripped of his parliamentary seat after he went into exile following sharp disagreements with deceased President John Magufuli. Lissu left Tanzania to seek medical attention in 2017 after he suffered gunshot wounds in an attack carried out by unknown assailants in the capital, Dodoma. His supporters claim it was an assassination attempt. For the opposition party's reaction to the payment of benefits of his former presidential candidate, I read John Rema. He is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocol for Chadema.
This is part of the reconciliation process, which we have just started. Is Freeman Mbowe, the chairman of the party, get out of the prison. And among other things, the issue of Tundu Lissu was brought on the table, and now the government have decided to act on it. The government is trying to build up so that we can see if they are serious or not. But they have started good and well, because there are also other issues we have agreed with the government that they should be sorted out quickly and amicably. For instance, the political prisoners, the political motivated cases, and it was just yesterday, 19 members of Chadema in Mwanza were arrested last year when they were in a church praying for Freeman Mbowe to get released from the prison. They were charged with sedition. Yesterday, they were all released by the government dropping all the charges. So we are seeing this as a build-up process towards the reconciliation.
So Chadema is pleased with the confidence-building measure that the government is taking, particularly when it comes to reconciliation efforts and talks that recently began?
Up to the moment, I can say yes. The government is showing a good will, particularly Her Excellency President Samia Suluhu Hassan. She's been showing the positive signs towards the reconciliation process which we have just begun. So to the moment, I can say yes, but it is only from the president who she is working very hard towards the reconciliation process. But on the other hand, we are seeing police activities are not, they have not refrained. It was just only today they arrested one member of us in Tunduma, in the border between Tanzania and Zambia. Even that member was in a funeral. And also yesterday night in Dar es Salaam, around 2 p.m. in the night, our member of the Coastal Zone, which is Public Secretary Lilian Kimei, she was surrounded by the police, and then the police, they searched her house in the early in the morning. They were saying that they had the report that this lady, she wanted to start her army, she has an army uniform. Sometimes it's not true. They searched her house, they found nothing. So on the side of the police, we are not seeing them refrain from harassing our members.
But, Mrema, some people are suggesting that if the government is working hard, or for that matter, the president is working hard to try to reconcile the country, then members of Chadema should also ensure that they don't run afoul with the laws, prevailing laws, so that police will not crack down on them. What do you say to that?
All the time, you have never been violating the law. And that's why we have never been condemned in the court of law. The police, they just harass us. When they took us to the court, we always win those cases because they are trampled up charges. If it was that the Chadema members were violating the law, I'm sure after today, our members were being behind the bar. But when we go to the court of law, the police fail to provide any evidence on our members, and that's why the court decided to let them free. So the issue is the mentality of the police. There are still some of them, they are still under Magufuli regime.
What is Chadema's expectations going forward, especially with this effort being put in by the president at this reconciliation process?
We are on the negotiation table. We have brought down 10 issues on the table before the president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, and his party, the ruling party, CCM. And we have formed a team of 10 members from Chadema, 10 members from the Samia government and his party. The team now from the Samia Suluhu Hassan is led by the vice chairman of the ruling party, Colonel Abdrahman Kinana. And on our side, Freeman Mbowe is leading our team. So we are still on the table dealing with issues, but the most critical issue is the new constitution.
John Mrema is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocol for Chadema. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The Electoral Commission of Zambia launched its voter registration drive in provincial towns across the country this week. It followed a stakeholders meeting in Indola in the Copperbelt province. Emily Sikazwi, the vice chairperson of the Electoral Commission, says it's acting on a recent court ruling as well as appeals by stakeholders to organize voter registration. Meanwhile, Sikazwi called on citizens to submit voters' cards of deceased family members during the voting registration process. This, she says, will help the Electoral Commission remove names of the dead and help boost transparency and credibility of the elections. For the latest development, I reach Emily Sikazwi.
This has been a cry for our people over the years. And 2022, the Commission, with the support from government, has decided to proceed with the process. It is something that we have always wanted to do, but we didn't have adequate resources. We've been sued by some civil society organizations around this question, and the Supreme Court ruled that indeed we needed to do continuous voter registration. So in complying with that judgment, this is what we are starting to do.
How will the continued voter registration exercise help the Electoral Commission?
It will help because, you see, when there's a general election, we are always scrambling and making sure that everybody's registered a short time, and there are queues and queues of our people. Now, in bringing electoral services closer to our people, we think that continuous voter registration will be helpful. For example, if a child turns 16 and they get a national registration card, the minute they turn 18, they can just go to the districts and register. We don't have to wait until the general elections are closed by to start scrambling around and making sure that everybody registers as a voter. I think this time round we'll be capturing more people than we have done before. And this is good for democracy in Zambia, because then we're allowing participation of all stakeholders, including persons with disabilities.
How will this be done? Is it district by district with different timelines?
We will do this continuously, but twice a year, the register will be certified. So every 6 months, we certify the register and we start again. We certify the register and we start again. In so doing, we'll be building up to the numbers that we expect to have on the register.
So, Mr. Kazwe, will political parties and or civil society groups and other stakeholders be involved in this process?
They will be involved. And that is why today, countrywide, in the 10 provinces, we have had stakeholder meetings with political parties, the church groups, civil society organizations, professional bodies, persons with disabilities, and so on and so forth, in order to bring them on board, to understand the processes that we're going to start. And suspicions will always be there. Just like in America, there are suspicions about these questions. But in democracies, people are allowed to have their own opinions as long as the majority of the people understand that if rigging was possible, how come Zambia has now changed from 1991 to date? 6 presidents tells you that democracy in Zambia is growing. We change when people decide that they don't want the regime anymore. We go to the polls and they change that regime. So it tells you that Zambia is progressing. And indeed, we are consolidating our democratic process.
What about the issue of educating the prospective voters?
The Commission has a large and broad network of voter educators, and they are dotted around the whole country. And they have enough resources to begin rolling out the process of educating our voters around continuous voter registration. This is nothing new. We always do this in between by-elections, during general elections, and so on and so forth. So all systems go starting tomorrow. People are going to start registering, or they are going to change the voting station because they have been transferred from their places of work to another province or another district. Or if their registration cards have been defaced, they are eligible to change and get a new one.
Emily Sikazwi is the Vice Chairperson of the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Malian women marched in the capital Friday to bring attention to what they say is a marked increase in gender-based violence. Women and girls do not have equal rights under the law in Mali. For VOA, Annie Reisenberg reports from the Malian capital, Bamako.
About 200 women took to the streets of Bamako on Friday morning, calling for action against gender-based violence after four murders of women by their romantic partners in April and May. The demonstrators carried banners commemorating those who were killed around Bamako's peace monument before the group marched a few meters away to Mali's Ministry of Justice. State security forces blocked the women from entering the ministry compound, but allowed a few representatives to pass through. Aminata Male, a master's student, says she herself suffered violence at the hand of her ex-husband, and she witnessed friends experience the same. Generally, she says, in Mali, women keep quiet about these situations. But now women are starting to become conscious, and we're starting to speak up. That's what will really get things moving. Jean Gerde Maiga, president of a women's rights organization in her hometown of Kati, 20 kilometers from Bamako, says when she heard about the march, she decided to gather a group of women to come to the capital. She says it's important for us to have a big mobilization because it's been more than 7 years that we've had a preliminary draft of a law on gender-based violence, and we are struggling to get past the preliminary stage. The law Maiga references has garnered attention in Mali since women's rights groups began working to pass it. In 2021, a prominent religious leader called for the resignation of the women's minister after she attempted to introduce the draft. The ministry abandoned the project shortly after. The law would specifically target gender-based violence, which in many people's view is ignored by authorities in Mali. Bintou Koulibaly, president of Mali's Association for the Progress and Defense of Women's Rights, APDF, says in addition to the murders, APDF recorded cases of rape in April and May, including one of an 8-year-old girl. She says they are calling on the authorities to act and are calling on families to play their role in protecting women, especially when they try to leave marriages. Here, she says, marriages are so precious to people that even if their child runs away from the marriage, it's the parents who force her to return to the same man. And this is how our children are murdered. When your child flees their marriage, at the very least, you should sit down and listen to them. Statistics confirm that leaving a relationship can be dangerous for women. A 2018 study by the Femicide Census in Britain found that 1/3 of women killed by their partner had previously tried to leave. And a 2000 study by the National Institute of Justice and the CDC found that ending a relationship increases the risk of intimate partner violence. A small number of men were present as well. El Hadj Patrice Seydou Dembélé came to the march because, he says, he is angry. My own niece was brutally murdered by her boyfriend, who ran over her with his car in Toumignan, he says. A representative for Mali's Ministry of Women and Children was reached by phone and refused to comment. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Show me. Laila Bamba. Baby, I knew many koshak. Baby, some have a narrow pocket. Unioshe kama nikichafuka. Iyokose kama nikidondosha. Yani inama inuka.
Hallelujah. No, hey, hey.
That was Music from the Continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a wise man who knows proverbs reconciles difficulties. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.